the meaning of all misery in the universe is that sin is horrific. Until you see the moral outrage of sin in proper proportions, and until you see the magnificence of the holiness of God in proper proportions, that will seem to you like an overreaction.
This weekend on the Songtime broadcast, we look at Romans chapter 8, and this message from John Piper will talk about the connection point between suffering, the cross, and the life of a believer. Stay tuned for that message, but first, we're going to be joined by a couple. Chuck and Ashley Elliott have written a book called I Used to Be, Will You Fill in the Blank? As they talk about how to deal with grief and sorrow over our past disappointments. The many voices come together for that one message. I'm your host, Adam Miller. You're listening to Songtime Radio. When it comes to processing grief, we all approach it very differently. There are so many things that we can grieve in life, whether it's loss of a loved one, the loss of who we expected to be, all of our unmet expectations. They play a major role in shaping our sorrows, our sadnesses, our missed expectations that leave us feeling really, you know, up the hill or up this creek without a paddle. We don't know what to do, and it can be hard to get back. That's why I'm excited to be joined today by Chuck and Ashley Elliott, who have co-written a book called I Used to Be Blank. You can fill in the blank there. How to Navigate Large and Small Losses in Life and Find Your Path Forward. It's a great resource, one that I have been contemplating for a while now and thinking through, especially as we do ministry post-pandemic and dealing with people who are going through all of these issues. It does seem to be a subject that we as the church ought to be addressing very confidently with an answer to those questions. So, Chuck, Ashley, thank you for being a part of the Many Voices for that one message.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here. It's an honor.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, the title here is really interesting. I used to be blank, or fill in the blank. Explain to us the title here, because you're not directly addressing one idea of grief. We're talking about the loss of a loved one. You're talking about a lot of stuff here. I used to be could be many different things.
Yeah, I used to be, you know, pregnant. I used to be trusted. Those are a couple of the ways that we filled in the blanks. But as we really looked at our own loss and that path forward, which part of our story is we looked to God and we found hope in the Lord, that He gives us hope no matter what the loss is. And it's reestablishing that identity in Christ and the fact that we are on a solid rock, though we feel shaky. And so we go to the Lord for help, but we can navigate any of the types of losses in some similar ways, right? There's going to be differences, but if someone has gone through divorce or they've lost a job, whatever that loss is, we're kind of creating this path that they can insert their story into this work. And we use a biblical counseling-based approach to give people very practical tools to apply to their situation.
There were several times that Ashley and I had somebody say something to us that really struck us as if they were grieving something, but they didn't identify it as grief. I can tell you that I have a friend who used to be in the service, in the military. And one time he told me, I asked him how he was doing in his transition, and he was working a job in civilian life. And I said, well, what's it like now? And he says, I miss being important. He was like, I used to be important. Because he used to feel like he was defending our country. He was going overseas. He was doing something that he had great, great meaning attached to. And then when he comes back here, he doesn't feel like he's doing something as important. And his identity had been shaken because he's like, I used to be important. I used to be able to do something that I felt like was making a huge difference. And now I'm just here and I'm working a job. And yes, he loved his family, but he hadn't grieved that loss.
And when you talk about the sort of experiences that you've been through, our listeners might be responding, so, well, you've already worked through the processes of grief. You've been able to write it down. You've been able to go on shows like this and talk about it. I'm not there yet. For anyone who is in the middle of it and is not able to articulate it, what sort of advice do you have for them?
It's okay that you don't feel like you've moved to a point that maybe you're thinking you're supposed to be at. And a lot of times we put pressure on ourselves that we either come up with in our mind or maybe what we think society would be comfortable with if we were to a further point. So if you lost somebody, if you lost a spouse, let's just take that for example, the fact that it still hurts and you're not past it or haven't moved on, that's okay. When you lose somebody or something that you really loved, it changes you. It changes you, and life's going to look different, and you have things to figure out. And be patient with yourself, but also make plans for what it looks like to take steps to continue to be healthy and to have community. And it doesn't have to be on someone else's timetable, but you can be curious about it and have conversations with people. And you say that, well, I'm not quite there yet. Well, what would it look like for you to be a little bit more healthy? If that's what you're going for, if you were going to have more community, what would that look like? Well, I haven't been to church in probably 2 or 3 months. Okay. When do you think you'd like to be able to go back? Next week? Oh, that's too soon. Okay. Well, let's make a calendar reminder and let's think about 3 weeks from now. You say that I may not even go into the building, but I'm going to pull up in the parking lot and I'm going to be there for a minute and kind of just take that step. So not putting too much pressure on yourself that you have to have everything figured out for what that looks like, but not leaving it alone, because that wound needs to be looked at and it needs to be taken care of.
And even going a little bit deeper there, if you don't want to go to church now, what will be different in 3 weeks that will make you suddenly want to go? People say time heals, but it's what we do with our time that allows us to heal. So if there's a pain that we just don't deal with for 3 weeks, we probably won't feel different. And so if we say, yeah, I think that if I do some of my grief processing, if I read a little bit, or if I'm reading the Bible at home, then maybe that will help me, because I think that going to church is going to confront me with all of the pain that I have toward God, or just the sorrow, or when I'm at church, I feel a lot more. Well, how do we bring church into our lives, right? Because church is not a building. How do we bring Jesus into our life? Turn on a worship song and allow ourselves in the comfort of our own home to process with the Lord what we're feeling. And so sometimes when we break it down and we look into it a little bit more, it gives us a step that we can take before that bigger step. And so we do walk through kind of some of this in the book. And one of the things is this positive and negative space. People get in a negative space, they think differently. So if you're grieving and you're not ready, having someone help you get out of that negative space can help. And so we do some exercises and worksheets and such with clients and help them to process. And I think that gives people a lift from the heaviness that they experience and can help them maybe take a step forward.
We've been talking with Chuck and Ashley Elliott. Their book is called I Used to Be Fill in the Blank: How to Navigate Large and Small Losses in Life and Find Your Path Forward. You can find out more information about their book by giving us a call. It's 508-362-7070, or head over to our website at songtime.com. Well, a quick word of announcement before we get into our study in the book of Romans. We are headed to Boston this weekend. Sunday, we're going to be joined by one of our authors, Tim Shoemaker, to talk about his book, The Very Best Hands-On Kinda Dangerous Family Devotions. It's all coming up this Sunday evening as we gather in the Boston area for a free conference with Tim Shoemaker. It's not too late to come and join us. Find out more information by heading over to our website at songtime.com. You can register online and find out all of the details, but please join us and help us get the word out so others will come and hear from Tim Shoemaker how to be exciting and dynamic as we pass on our faith to the next generation. Again, head over to our website to find out more information at songtime.com. Well, today as we continue our study in the book of Romans, we find ourselves in a very familiar text. Romans chapter 8 reminds us that all things work together for good to those who love God and for those who are called according to his purpose. But it also is embedded within this whole context of suffering. It makes a connection between our sadness, our suffering, and our grief, and it points to the cross and how Jesus suffered on our behalf. Here is a message from Dr. John Piper as we look at Romans chapter 8.
The call to suffer is in verses 16 and 17. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him. in order that we may also be glorified with him. Very shocking way of saying you must suffer. Whoever would be my disciple must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. That's what Paul's quoting. Finishing the first missionary journey, Paul comes back doing discipleship in the churches. And the basic, first, inescapable thing he says in Acts 14:22 is, through many tribulations you must enter the kingdom of God. Now the point of verses 18 to 25 are simple. It's worth it. It's worth it. Now it's more than that is being said. That's just the way he starts. Don't consider the sufferings of this time worthy to be compared to the glory that will be revealed in us. It's worth it. Now, how does he help us feel this? Because it's hard to feel it when you're in it. And the way he helps us is very surprising. He says all suffering is universal. Secondly, he says it's historical. And third, he says it's judicial. Number one, suffering, he says, is universal. Verse 22, for we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. Verse 21, the creation itself will be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God. So there you have creation enslaved to corruption. Third verse, verse 20. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. So, whole creation groans and suffers. The whole creation is in slavery to corruption, and the whole creation is subjected to futility. So, the first observation he makes is, your suffering should never be thought of merely in private terms. It's part of something absolutely universal. It isn't just about me. It isn't about yesterday's sin necessarily. It isn't maybe about a lifetime of sinning. Something else is going on here. Something global, something universal has brought this horrible reality to pass. Second observation now that he makes. It's historical. It has a beginning in history, and it will have an end at the coming of the Lord. Verse 18, you see that reference to the present time? For I consider that the sufferings of this present time, that's history as we know it, this present time are not worthy to be compared to the glory that will be revealed to us. Verse 20, the creation was subjected to futility. That's an event. Creation didn't come into being this way. It was subjected to futility. Now, it will have an end. The freedom of the glory of the children of God is going to end someday. Thirdly and lastly, it's judicial. And this is the one that's most important. The creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Now, who did that? Somebody took the universe and disordered it. It's in tremendously painful disorder. Your lives are filled with painful disorder, disordered relationships, disordered health. Life is disordered. The universe is disordered. Tsunamis are a disorder. Hurricanes are a disorder. Cyclones, disorder. Floods, famines, diseases, disorder. Somebody did that. Who was it? Answer, God did that. And the reason we know that verse 20 is referring to God is because of the words in hope at the end of the verse. The creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. God judged the universe with its misery because of sin. Without Romans 8, 18 to 25, deeply gripping your soul, your first reaction when you meet suffering is to distance God from it. That is not comforting. I've been a pastor for 28 years. I've buried a lot of people. I've walked through many divorces. I've wept over so many wayward children, including my own. I am not a foreigner to people's pain, and I want to be a biblical comfort. The creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it in hope. Now, here are a few closing implications of this. The meaning of all misery in the universe is that sin is horrific. Until you see the moral outrage of sin in proper proportions, and until you see the magnificence of the holiness of God in proper proportions, that will seem to you like an overreaction. The reason God subjects the world to futility is to teach you about your heart. You don't know your heart. Nobody wakes up feeling that God has done an outrage by sending His Son to die for them, because it would be unjust of God to do that. We all feel like we deserve redemption and we deserve better than we get. And God has painted a world for us that says, you want to know how ugly and outrageous and unthinkably hideous your sin is? Look at AIDS. Look at cancer. That's what it is. Not only has all the creation suffering, but even we who have the first fruits of the Holy Spirit, groan inwardly. In fact, Paul seems so eager to say to this crowd, Christians, don't conclude from no condemnation, no suffering. Don't make that mistake. That's what this whole chapter seems to me to say. No condemnation. Oh, Christian, don't draw the conclusion prosperity. Don't draw the conclusion ease. There's a Calvary road to be walked. Some of it will be physical suffering. Some of it will be persecution. Walk it with me, and you come out into the liberty of the children of God and a new heavens and a new earth forever. It will be so long and so great that this slight momentary affliction of 80 years with great pain will seem to you as nothing.
One of the keys to understanding why we as Christians suffer in this world is right here in Romans chapter 8. There is such an important role to play in the suffering that we endure that brings about our sanctification. We saw this again in Romans chapter 5, that this suffering is going to produce in us endurance and then character and ultimately lead us to hope. Hope in God. That is the reason God would allow us to go through these trials and these tribulations. We see even in our theme verse in Romans 1:16 and 17 that we're saved by faith, but it's also faith that helps us to walk day by day. The righteous shall live by faith. That means that each and every day we have to learn to trust God. Our faith is incomplete, and God in His loving kindness and His faithfulness is shaping that faith through every single trial, through all of the suffering. Now, I say this quite a bit in counseling with individuals in my church and the community. When you are suffering, it is hard to imagine why God, a loving God, would allow you to go through that experience. And in fact, you might even say, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. Why would God, who is supposed to love me, allow me to suffer in this way? But here's the answer to that. And it's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow. But God actually does love you. He loves you more than you love anyone else. He loves you more than you would love your enemies. He loves you so much that He knows that through this suffering, you will come out refined as gold and as silver and more precious than gemstones. This is the reason in God's love, He knows that these trials, these momentary trials, will actually produce in you a greater faith, a greater hope, and a greater refinement of righteousness and obedience to the plan of God. I know it's hard. I know it's difficult, but don't avoid it. Don't make excuses for it. Press into it and find that as you go through these challenges, God will bring you through to the other side, and you will be better off for it. If we've been able to encourage you, we would love to hear from you. You can write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or you can give us a call. It's 508-362-7070. You can also head over to our website at songtime.com or look us up on social media. On behalf of everyone here at Songtime, we want to thank you for listening. From Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller with our theme verse, Romans 1, 16 and 17. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith.